Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Brocast. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network, and I am joined on this fine Friday morning, this beautiful Friday morning, this transcendent Friday morning by Tracy Pearson. Tracy, how are you?
I'm feeling that I'm flying above everything, Dave.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Just by your uplifting words.
Yeah, believe it or not, I'm walking on air.
Suddenly I'm back down.
Yeah.
It lasted about 3 seconds.
Believe it or not, I'm walking on air.
So people were complaining about my whale interpretation. I think...
No way. They're going to love it.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it's... my first introduction to that song, because I'm not...
Seinfeld.
I'm not... Yeah, exactly. I'm not the 55-year-old people think I am. I am, in fact, 38. But Seinfeld. Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Yeah. We're a minute in. We've got a lot to talk about today. UCLA basketball continues to go heavily into the transfer portal, seeking out some targets for next year's roster. Hearing some stuff on guards, wing, power forward, all that good stuff. And then we're also going to talk about, as promised, the UCLA defense heading into spring ball, since we already previewed the offense two podcasts ago, because we gave you two last week, because, again, I was a degenerate in Vegas. But today we're going to start off with basketball. First, Tracy, Arizona lost last night.
Oh, gosh. It was really funny. Isn't it really horrible by human nature that... Schadenfreude is, I don't even know if you could call it that, because there's something joyous among UCLA fans. And then there are a bunch of other friends that I have who are from the former Pac-12, and they were texting me joyous texts about it too.
It's so good every time, because they keep doing it in such disappointing fashion. I think it was something like, their last 5 or 6 tournament appearances, they have lost to a team seeded over them by like 3 or 4 seed positions every single time.
This is it. I got this texted to me by 3 different people. It was John Wilner's text. 2022, as a number 1 seed, they lost to a 5 in the Sweet 16. 2023, as a 2 seed, they lost to a 15 seed.
Princeton.
In the first round. In 2024, that's this year, as a two seed, they lost to a six seed in the Sweet 16.
So,
and
here's
Wilmer says, not good, not good at all.
No. So here's where I want to start this, because, and we do have to give a couple minutes on Arizona. Tommy Lloyd. Here's what I'll say about Tommy Lloyd. Great system. Great offensive system.
They've great recruiting. Great recruiting.
Very good recruiting to a fit. Not a good coach. Not a good game coach. Does not game plan one iota and does not tell his team to do a damn thing during the game aside from occasionally calling a timeout and calling a play.
So
other than that, they do not follow any sort of game plan, and they can be lulled into taking the worst threes if you just pack it in and let them do it, and then it's entirely dependent on whether they hit them. Not a good coach.
So I got to leave that up to you, because you know the Tommy
Lloyd. You love Tommy.
Well, Tommy's a friend. When I was the West Coast basketball recruiting guy, we had a little crew of West Coast guys, and he was the longtime assistant in Gonzaga. So he was part of the crew. I'll leave that up to you. I'm
happy with that.
There is definitely a result issue, you know, going on with Arizona. It's kind of funny too, how it falls into the same grooves. You see them at the beginning of the year, and this has happened every time with Tommy Lloyd. It happened under Sean Miller. You go, crap, Arizona's really good. Damn. Wait, that guy's okay. Those guys, wait, there's the other guy. Oh, another guy. Oh my God. They are really good. Yeah. So then they come out of the gate, and they look really impressive. I think were they ranked number one this year?
At one time this year, yes.
At one time this year. Then they hit a little wall, and they look a little vulnerable. But then they come back gangbusters, right? Mm-hmm. So then you're back by the end of the season, and that's how they get those good seeds. And then there's that tournament thing.
And then some teams with athletes actually game plan for them, and they don't game plan in response, and the end result is they lose.
And this is my theory. I appreciate your theory. Mine is that they generally get good athletes, right? So they play generally good defense throughout the season, but in the tournament, damn, their defense breaks down every year. It's like those guys suddenly are not motivated to play defense in the tournament. I don't know if it's the mentality, like the transfer mentality now, or the guys you get are out just to put up numbers to showcase themselves for the NBA. It's just that the defense last night there were some massive breakdowns
or terrible coaching. But two straight years of getting back cut to death for their final game of the season.
One of my favorite plays of the tournament. I can't remember which Clemson dude it was. It was on an inbound. It was at a couple of minutes left. He's out like on the left wing.
Yeah, and he splits the switch.
And what he did is he gets his defender on his back, and he faked a screen. And he just a little second with the screen, then pivot to the basket, feed him the ball, and there's no one there.
No communication.
No
whatsoever.
One. I rewound that like four times, and I tried to say, did he know he was doing that?
Clemson's cutting was really good, but also Arizona was just not communicating at all on defense. It was incredible.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Think of the word screen.
Whatever, man.
Slap me.
Whatever.
Somebody come into this room and come here and slap me. Dave can't slap me through the microphone.
I can try.
Even though he's tried.
So anyway, Arizona, very funny. That five stars, would watch again.
And just so you know, the classiness of Dave and Tracy, we are monitoring the board and deleting a lot of offensive posts. Guys, just don't. Let's.
I
not
don't get, like personal attacks.
Let's stay away from personal attacks. Okay,
yeah,
from attacking someone's wife, attacking how they look. Let's just stay away from that.
We're gonna delete for the Methcat fans too. I don't like that either. So anyway,
I
just keep
like
it classy. You know what? I like good spirited. Like, you can be vicious, but be kind spirited. Keep it to the play on the court.
Vicious but kind spirited. That's going to be on your.
That is my Twitter ethos.
There you go.
You know, I'm not trying to. You know,
you should put that up in your X profile up there.
Don't call it X. Come on.
I know. I was joking.
Don't even.
Vicious, but
kind spirited.
But kind spirited.
All right. Well, that's enough on Arizona. They can get to sewing on their next Sweet 16 banner. We have a lot to talk about with UCLA's basketball recruiting. So
we do.
There's a lot going on.
You know what? First off, let me just set. I just want to set this one thing.
We can
go from here.
Dig the hole and set it like a
post. Because everyone keeps with every new development in UCLA transfer recruiting, everyone repeats these questions. Okay, so first off,
why am I here?
What is pretty much in life? Pretty much.
Why do bad things happen to good people?
can we never have anything nice? Those are the questions fan always ask. But in this instance, they ask, where are we going to get the scholarships? We've said a number of times, I've repeated over and over and over, they will have the scholarships. There will be people that leave the UCLA program. Okay. I mean, I don't want to get into the details of how that happens, but it's pretty obvious. Most of the time, the guy's going to go, wow, they just recruited way over me and I'm going to leave. If not, there will be discussions. There will be, they're not going to recruit too many guys for how many scholarships they have. Just trust in that. They've been recruiting, seemingly, it's been a little guard heavy.
I've got breaking news. You want breaking news?
Surely.
Our Brandon Jenkins just reported Stanford forward Brandon Angel will enter the portal as a grad transfer.
That's so weird. That's just coming out of nowhere for me.
Totally nowhere. Not something we speculated or knew about or hinted at
or posted last night. Okay, I got to talk about this because this is fun. I put up the original post and I tweaked it. There's going to be, you know, a significant player going in the transfer portal from another program, just so I don't. That UCLA be, you know, I didn't even say UCLA be interested in. Just a, I thought everyone knew. What site do we publish?
we publish 247 Sports UCLA Bruin Report Online, I believe is the name.
I don't think it was snarky. I just think everyone's in a bad mood, and I kind of get it. But everyone's saying, "Well, oh yeah, of course, there are good players going in every day." Okay, guys. Okay. I'm adding to that.
This was referring to Brandon Angel, who just indicated who.
We meant Brandon Angel. Do you want me to talk while you do a story, and we'll all time it to see how fast you can write a story from the front page? Because you're amazing.
All right. Yeah.
You've written stories like in your car.
All right. Set the clock. I've opened Article Manager.
Okay. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Wait. Oh. Okay. Wait. No. I gotta time it. Don't start. You're cheating.
I'm not starting. I'm not typing yet.
Okay. Hold on. Stopwatch. Ready? Go.
All right.
So first off, yeah. Well, they will have scholarships. Don't worry. It looks a little guard heavy until this right now. It's because UCLA transfer recruiting is dictated by who's in the transfer portal. So their targets, as I've written, are a power forward, a wing type, and one or two guards. That's what they want. Ideally, that's if Adembona does not go in the portal. If Adembona returns, that's what UCLA is looking to get. Three, probably four guys. Right now, as we've told you, there haven't been power forward. I'd say that the biggest target is a power forward. We haven't seen that. We haven't seen too many power forwards in the transfer portal that UCLA would consider are good enough, good fits, would be interested, some kind of connection. I even told you, you can probably expect, I mean, we wrote that story, Oregon State's Tyler Bilodeau, and Stanford's Brandon Angell are two guys that generally there's word out there that they would enter the transfer portal. They had not entered the transfer portal as of this morning. Now we just got news that Brandon Angell did in fact enter the transfer
portal. You know what? It's not fair because Brandon Jenkins already did a story, so I can crib from it. So this isn't really a great...
Oh, come on. You don't have to say that. You could have just kept going and used it. Go, go,
I don't like to lie to the people, you know?
Go, go, go. Yeah, you do. You just lied.
True.
So, that's they're recruiting the guys they can recruit that are in the transfer portal. Now, it's legal. The program generally doesn't talk to anyone who is in the transfer portal, but it is now pretty legal for discussions to go on between intermediaries. That happens. I've been telling you pretty much that there will be guys UCLA be interested in. It is March 29th. The transfer portal remains open until May 1st. The NCAA tournament isn't even done. Here's the thing that's among all that, the thing that has delayed a lot of people putting their name in the transfer portal is spring break. People, the kids went on vacation. They didn't want to think about it. And I've heard this seriously. Probably among 5 to 7 guys went on spring break. They went on spring break with their girlfriends and they don't want to think about it. They just need to decompress. And then now this weekend, it's Easter. So a lot of them are going home to be with their families and they want to talk about everything with their parents. But that doesn't mean they haven't reached out through intermediaries to potential programs that are interested. It's why so often you see maybe someone go in the portal and it seems like his recruitment is already accelerated. It's because legally they've already, you know, reached out. The way the transfer portal is, there are so many guys who've gone in that have never been picked up. So kind of the common practice now is to put out feelers before you go in the transfer portal to see what kind of interest there would be. And that's, you know, if you're talking about icebergs and how much are above, the surface, probably a great deal of the work being done on transfers are done below the surface, meaning before they put their name in the transfer portal.
Right.
So that's the whole process. Now, after hinting about it last night, Brandon Angell has put his name in. UCLA will be very intent on going after him. Let's talk a little bit about him.
Let's talk about him.
6'8", right?
Sure.
Good size. Are you multitasking right now? You are.
No, I already put up. I put up Brandon's story and then tweeted it.
Okay, fine.
No, but it's cheating because I didn't have to write the whole thing.
Okay, fine. I mean, I was timing you though.
So I know. I get it.
I would have kept my timer going for
all your. All you're timing me on is administrative tasks. Okay. I want to prove to the people sometime. Maybe I'll time one of my post-game recaps and how quickly I can get those up.
Okay. No, I mean, I like doing it. I like doing it while you're on, while we're doing the podcast. That's fun. That okay. Nice. Brandon Angell, 6'8", a good 240 pounds. He's a big guy. Last season with Stanford averaged 13 points a game.
45% from three.
45% from three. Just 4.7 rebounds. Is an okay athlete, not a great athlete, but a skilled guy, gets a lot of his points shooting the ball from the outside, but also can do it with his back to the basket. Here's his situation. He's had 4 years. He has his COVID year remaining. He's an excellent student in economics at Stanford. He's just about a 4.0. He will need to go to grad school. There is not a grad program at Stanford available to him. The Stanford graduate business school. No one really knows who gets into that. There must be guys who get into it, but everyone I've ever talked to who knows anything about it says no one gets in that. So he really has no chance. And what I've also heard, though, is Mr. Angell has put a lot of time into school and basketball, and he wouldn't mind just playing some basketball. So he's going to go to a I don't know if he'll go into a grad like the Anderson School or a graduate school of business wherever he goes. He might opt for something else as a graduate player. UCLA seems like a good fit. You would be surprised if someone of his academic caliber went to like an ASU. Ooh, sorry, ASU, but that just came out really fast. Or wow. Arizona. Let's say Arizona. I mean,
your good buddy is an ASU grad.
Yeah, he is, though. He's going to be really mad. Hopefully he won't listen. Hey, ASU's gotten better academically.
No, that's why it was an interesting shot to take.
Yeah, that was antiquated. That was wrong.
Let's don't take a shot at ASU when USC is sitting right there just across the way.
That would be a little bit of a surprise if he didn't transfer to, you know, pretty much an elite academic institution, but one that would have to offer him, you know, a graduate program that fits him for what he wants to do. And from what I've heard, he wants to concentrate on some basketball. UCLA seems like a good fit for that.
So from a player standpoint, I do want to talk about Angel a little bit more. So there's two ways to think about Brandon Angel. One is, how does he upgrade over what UCLA has? And that's profound. Just as an offensive player alone, even ignoring the defense, as an offensive player alone, he's a substantial upgrade over whatever UCLA was running out there this year, whether it was the two centers or whether it was Brandon Williams or whether it was Burke Buyukunjul. He's a massive, massive offensive upgrade over there. Defensively, he's not awesome. He's fine. As Tracy said, not a great athlete, and he's not a substantially very good rebounder either. He's still better than Brandon Williams and Burke were this year. He'll still provide something there. This isn't my ideal world four, but it is such a substantial upgrade over last year that it fits that minimum standard that you should be looking for if you're UCLA in who you want as a four. And it's 1 year. He's obviously shown that he can compete at this level because he has. So it would be absolutely a take for me.
Yeah, I agree. And I think UCLA thinks that too. They could... So far in the transfer portal, there haven't been a lot of power forwards. Yeah. There haven't been a lot of, even if there were, like I said, it's not easy. While there have been a lot of grads, football and basketball, mostly football, who've gotten into UCLA, it's not that easy. And not just grads, I'm sorry, transfers. It's not an easy process, especially if you're like a junior. Because you have to be on your way towards your degree. Freshman and sophomore is actually easy, and it's easier now as a graduate because of the education program. Yeah. So it's a hard fit to find a guy who would check all the boxes. So I don't think you're going to find someone ideal. Like, let's say Tyler Bilodeau went in the transfer portal. Obviously a good scorer, better, a little bit of a better rebounder, than Angel, not as good a shooter. Right. Yeah. I mean, there aren't too many guys who are a good outside shooter as Angel is, probably the equivalent of about the same athleticism and defensive potential, I'd say. I mean,
and Bilodeau's only a slightly better rebounder. He's not even like substantially better.
Right. So, I mean, I think both of those guys are takes for UCLA because you're not going to find a guy who averaged 13 or 14 points a game, 8 rebounds, and shot 40% from three.
And I like Angel more than Bilodeau. Bilodeau's obviously not even in the portal yet, but between those two, if one's a take for me, it's probably Angel over Bilodeau, even though you get more years of Bilodeau. I think Angel, I also have a feeling that in a toughness-oriented system, you could see Angel suddenly some of these numbers that haven't been great could suddenly get better, particularly on rebounding is my
guess. I mean, when you have Jared
Haas, not a good coach either. I'm going to drop the not a good coach things from that'll be my position here. I will drop the not a good coach.
When you have Mick Cronin on your ass about rebounding, that would be different than Jared Haas.
Yeah.
I think he's a take. I think it's going to be a while. He's probably going to do his due diligence. He might take some visits. He'll look around and, you know, weigh all his options. I don't think this would be a quick turnaround that he'd automatically. I mean, I know UCLA's interested. I know he's interested in UCLA. I haven't heard about the other schools. I did hear that he was going to take his time. And I mean, he took his time going into the portal. So he was one of those guys, I think, that was on vacation. There's that. I mean, when we're talking about other power forwards, you know, there's a rumor Trey Townsend from Oakland will go in, right? To me, he's like pretty much ideal guy as a fit for UCLA.
Oh, Trey Townsend?
Yeah, Trey Townsend.
Sorry, I was doing a little bit more work on our website. Trey Townsend.
That's your guy. You want to marry him. You want to kiss him.
I love him so much. I mean, if he jumped in tomorrow or whatever his coach was thinking he was going to do, I mean, yeah, he's my ideal fit. But here's and this is just a cautionary tale for, I think, the entire portal in general. And it's the classic phrase, don't let good enough be the enemy of great. Bird in hand, whatever you want to call it, whatever phrase you want to use. If Angel wants to come and you can get that done quickly, Angel. If Trey Townsend goes in and he looks interested, Trey Townsend, absolutely. Because he rebounds the hell out of the ball along with being a talented scorer. But this is where I think the more bodies go in, the more leverage and positioning UCLA can play with. But until these guys go in, you do have to operate with bird in hand. It requires flexibility throughout this process.
Well, just like talking about Trey Townsend, he is going to be incredibly sought throughout the country. You'd have to, I mean, he's from Oakland's in Michigan. Michigan, is he a Michigan State guy or what?
Yeah.
I mean, Michigan State has NIL money. I could see Trey Townsend getting $1 million a year. There's going to be so much competition. There's no West Coast connection.
A Michigan State fit too.
Michigan State fit. So what do you hang out and wait for guys like this? But let's say, you know, if Brandon Angel wants to take his time, that might even behoove UCLA to see who else goes in. But if he turns around in a week and says, I want to commit and I'm done, you have to take him. So we're back to the overview when we were sent off track because of Brandon Angel. So, yeah, they're recruiting power forwards. They want a athletic wing. We have told you they are after Kobe Johnson. Kobe Johnson's taking his time. I think there's a feeling from his camp, or at least from him, he might want to test the waters in the NBA, but I don't think that will last too long. It's not going to be one that's, drawn out. I think he'll think about it for a while and then realize he's got to come back, to college. He will probably take a little bit of his time, but I heard UCLA is one of his top three-ish. I don't know who the other two are, but considered himself a good fit for Mick Cronin.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
If they got Kobe Johnson and they had, so we're talking about the defense and the athleticism, let's say a Brandon Angel, but if they had Kobe Johnson and you had a superior defender at your point guard position, you had a Dembona who, let's say he returns at your post position, and Kobe Johnson, who's an elite defender, you don't need five excellent defenders. You've got the point guard spot on the ball. You've got the wing and you got the post. You can plug in some scorers in there. And that's the makings of a good team. So they're looking at wings. Obviously wings are easier to come by, but you're dictated by who's in the portal and when they go in. So that's why UCLA is going after the guys that are in the portal. Yeah. We've reported that Sky Clark, it looks like UCLA is going to get him. Also reported that it looks fairly good for Dominic Harris, the 6'3", 6'4", shooting guard from Loyola Marymount. And everyone's asking, why are they going after so many guards? Why? Like I said, ideally, power forward, athletic wing, and then probably two guards. They want some shooters. They want some guys who can put the ball in the basket. If there are guards on the team that decide, oh, wow, I'm not going to get playing time and they leave, I think Mick Cronin and his coaching staff have to do that. I think it's necessary to upgrade. So if they got, let's say, Sky Clark and Dominic Harris, Sky Clark would rotate in among the guards, probably relieve a little bit of Dylan Andrews' point guard responsibilities, can play off the ball. You could play them both at the same time. I've watched a lot of Dominic Harris. I don't like doing comparisons, but he's a more athletic version of David Singleton. He is 6'3 to 6'4, long, big, strong. He would be a senior, but he'd actually have a COVID year left, so he actually has 2 years. Can shoot the crap out of it. I mean, where is he? I've got him called up here, Dave.
I've got his numbers.
45%. 44.8.
On six shots a game.
On six shots a game. he's really athletic. He's a good defender. Just to finish it off, I was told he is LMU's best on-ball defender. He's the guy who they would assign to opponents' best wing player.
And he's not an LMU guy. He went to Gonzaga first for 2 years, then ended up at LMU for a year.
And he played at Gonzaga.
Yeah, but this is a former four-star, a former top 100 guy nationally from actually Southern California, Temecula. Yeah. It's all like the classic, like, this is actually the kind of guy that UCLA should be building a program around. He just kind of took a circuitous path. But if they can land him, that's the kind of fit that I think makes a ton of sense. Sky Clark, but Dominic Harris makes a ton of sense and adds shooting. And he's in he's a curious case because he started at LMU and he was their best player last year, but he was a bit player for Gonzaga, just never really found a fit there. He could be comfortable in a lot of different roles for UCLA. But if you want to just throw out some words that could make sense in a certain context, more athletic David Singleton. Please enjoy that. Take that for what it is.
So in my opinion, having watched and knowing Sky Clark for a while and having watched him and watching Dominic Harris, if they got Sky Clark and Dominic Harris, I believe Dominic Harris would start over Sky Clark.
He should.
I think it would be Dylan Andrews and Dominic Harris in the backcourt. If they got Kobe Johnson, I know we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but let's say they got Brandon Angel, they would go from a freshman sophomore dominated team to pretty much starting three seniors and then two juniors. So now your next question is, what happens to Sebastian Mack? It would be great if Sebastian Mack stayed. Sebastian Mack probably shouldn't, well, not probably, he shouldn't have been a starter. He started on this team because there was no one else to start. He should have been coming off the bench and playing 14 minutes a game, learning how to play. It probably should be that way for his sophomore year. It'll always come down to what the player and his family think, you know, and God bless him. Parents or and families always think their kids are going to the NBA and better than they are. But we'll see, if he decides I'm going to stay, play behind some guys who will probably be ahead of me and really try to compete to win the spot over Dominic Harris and Sky Clark.
Yeah.
And get better and stay at UCLA or go someplace. I mean, here's a question for you, Dave. Could he go power six, or I mean, we're going to call it power five, right?
Whatever. Because yeah.
The Pac-12's gone.
Yeah.
And he could find a team to start.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, yeah. He's good enough and he showed enough that lower power five, I think he would find an easy starting position.
Okay. So he could start. So that could be an option for him, right? Mm-hmm. Then we'd talk about Will McClendon. I think it would make Will McClendon consider whether he wants to stay or whether he maybe wants to be the 13th man.
Kind of thing. His minutes would be hugely squeezed. So it'd be more a matter of how badly does he just want to be on the team? Does he want to be in Westwood? Does he want to get his degree from UCLA, transition into a coaching role or, you know, whatever that is? That's got to be the calculation for Will McClendon, or does he want to drop down a level?
Yeah. There's Jan Vide, who indicated he wanted to stay. You don't know who will stay, but they won't go into next season with 14 scholarship players.
No.
It will sort itself out. Yeah. But I think it's fun. I'm glad Brandon Angel did that because now I wanted to speculate a little bit on this podcast, and that makes it a little bit, we can put a name to the speculation a bit. So,
and I do want to talk about this because we've talked at length about Mick Cronin and integrating a lot of new players into his system. And I'll just put my cards on the table. I don't know if there's like a magic number of takes, like where suddenly you've gone overboard and it's integrating too many guys. And at that point, you know, there's this huge learning curve that ends up with November and December looking really, really rough again.
Well, I know the unmagic number, and that was seven freshmen.
You're right. And this won't be freshmen. So there's that. And then there's also the factor that it probably won't be whatever it ended up being, eight new guys like it was last year. But I don't know if that number is, like, I would like it if it could be kept to four, like, you know, and that's maybe a couple new guards, a new wing, and a new power forward. And
I think they'll only go over that, Dave, if Adem Bona leaves.
Correct. Yeah. Or if guys unexpectedly depart beyond the ones who might, you know, get pushed a little bit by the incoming freshmen. Or the incoming transfers.
Yeah, I even if they end up at 12, let's say they take four new guys and a lot of people leave and they're at 12, I don't think they'll go out necessarily to fill that 13th scholarship. I think there's an understanding that we can't have seven new guys again.
Yeah, you can't have so many cooks.
And the thing is too, it would be a little different because you would be getting transfers as opposed to seven freshmen and as opposed to four freshmen who were from overseas, so that whole acclimation process is difficult. It will be better with transfers because they've been playing in college basketball. They know what it takes. And I think the staff has a real understanding. They need to get guys who are capable of playing for Mick Cronin. But your point is well served. There's still a process of getting to know what that's like and coming around. I mean, we even saw it from Lazar Stefanovic, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It took 2 months. But here's the thing, and I think for the optimists out there, and even for me a little bit, when you're thinking about next year's roster, obviously none of this is a done deal. None of these guys are a completely done deal. It's not done until they're on campus. But as it is, if you added, say, Dominic Harris, Sky Clark, say they convince Kobe Johnson to stay, and you add, say, they convince Brandon Angel to come in, the upgrade in talent and the upgrade in athleticism between Kobe Johnson, Dominic Harris, I mean, Sky Clark even, and Brandon Angel at worst is a wash with Brandon Williams and Burke, but I think he's an upgrade in athleticism. That's a much more talented starting roster, and it makes the bench much more talented because the guys who are on the bench don't need to start. You know, Lazar Stefanovic as your sixth or seventh guy coming in to back up both the three and the four in certain short rosters, that's pretty cool. You know, he fits in that role. The shooting would be significantly improved with Angel, with Dominic Harris. We've already talked about how we think Dylan Andrews is going to become a much better shooter next year. But then you have Lazar Stefanovic coming off the bench with fresh legs. That would be a much, much better team from a talent standpoint. Obviously, a lot goes into how it integrates, and a lot goes into just making sure that these guys all end up on the roster next year. But
yeah, just think about the shooting, because everyone was really fixated on the shooting, and justifiably. Let's say you have that starting lineup I've talked about. Dominic Harris shoots 45% from three.
Brandon Angel shoots 45%.
Kobe Johnson was like 33, but the year before,
38, I think.
Yeah, something ridiculous. Dylan Andrews, I would be stunned if he doesn't shoot 36 this year. Stunned.
Yeah, 35, I would think, at least.
Lazar Stefanovic, 39%. And Sky Clark was 35%.
Yep.
So that would probably be your top seven rotation right there. Dang. You go from one of the easily one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the country to maybe one of the best.
Yeah, it would be up there. It would be it would certainly be in the top, whatever that is that you need to be, like top 100. I think they'd be there. So, all right, that's enough happy, crappy basketball talk. You know, we'll see once they start, you know, announcing some commitments. On to football. Crazy.
Okay, Dave, you take football for about a minute because I'm updating our transfer tracker.
All right, you do that. All right,
I'm going on mute.
Go on mute. All right, football begins on Tuesday. The first spring practice that's open to the media of the Deshaun Foster era. We already talked at length about the offense, but we wanted to give you kind of a peek at the defense heading into April. As it is right now, I've done the defensive unit previews for spring, and I'll say on offense, there's reason for some, you know, light optimism at certain positions. Defensively, really outside of linebacker, there's a lot of question marks. And even at linebacker, replacing Darius Muasau is going to come with some, perhaps some growing pains. But defensive line, so defensive tackle, they're more or less intact from last year. Jay Tawia is back. Keanu Williams is back. Gary Smith is back. We'll see how healthy Gary Smith is. He's constantly dealing with nagging injuries. He was at the end of last year as well. But defensive tackle should be a relative strength of this defense. Edge play could be a real struggle. They don't return any of their guys who really played last year. Shea Bryant Strother played a little bit, probably not much more than 100 snaps all year. He's going to be basically the old man of the unit. They're bringing in a bunch of grad transfers, but I wouldn't say high upside grad transfers. It's not like the Murphy twins when they brought them in from North Texas, or certainly Leatu Latu. It's some bodies. It fills out the depth chart, but they're not going to make anyone forget. They're not going to make anyone forget Carl Jones, let alone the guys who were ahead of him last year. So edge is going to be interesting, because when you get into the linebacker group, UCLA has a lot of bodies for essentially two positions in the linebacker group. And yeah, we don't know if the scheme is going to change yet. Our guess is that it probably won't change significantly from what Danton Lynn was running. But it could change a little bit. But if you look at the linebackers, they've got five guys on our projected depth chart listed at the two positions. Some of these guys, like, none of them really look like your classic edge rushers, but Ty Lee's got some length. He's already made the position switch from safety to linebacker. Could he go up another level and be a new Carl Jones? Let's see. Trey Edwards, he had some real size to him. His lower half looked already like a defensive lineman last year. He actually doesn't look like an edge rusher. He looks more like a, you know, pack on 50 pounds and be a defensive tackle. But could he make a move up to the defensive line? They're going to be searching for edge bodies is my prediction for this season. Just some guys who can effectively get after the pass rusher. So you're not going to be looking for ideal body types. You're just looking for guys with maybe some plus quickness, who have some nice handwork, who've maybe played that position in high school. Because a lot of guys who end up linebackers in college, if they were on a lower level high school team, they might have been playing defensive line at that level. You're going to be looking for bodies like that. Isaiah Patterson, we're already projecting to be an edge rusher. But maybe there'll be more from this linebacker group who move up. But that's going to be a big issue. If you've, you know, heard anybody talk about defensive play before, but certainly me, so much is dependent on that pass rush. If you don't have a pass rush, your secondary is going to look a lot worse. If you don't have a pass rush, there's going to be more pressure on your defensive tackles to get upfield. They're going to look worse in the run game. There's going to be a lot of knock-on effects if they can't get some sort of base pass rush from those edge spots. So that's going to be a critical thing to try to figure out beginning this spring. And then in the secondary, again, it's a lot of new bodies. And you just no way of knowing how this is all going to work out. Last year, they had a pretty good secondary, again, helped by that front seven. But Kenny Churchill's gone. Kamari Ramsey's gone. John Humphrey's gone. And Alex Johnson are all gone. So that's four of the five starters from last year, if you count the nickel. Now they're going to go into this year with Jalen Davies as one of the starting corners. So that you can pencil in as, okay, that'll be fine. Devin Kirkwood likely is the other cornerback, and he lost his starting job at the beginning of last year. So is that going to be fine? That's a question mark. He looked better at the end of last year when he was playing in a backup role, but it's now going to be, you know, his starting position again. Is he going to be able to do that? There isn't a ton of playable depth at cornerback. Right now, Isaiah Newcomb last year got relegated to the scout team, and actually Kanye Clark, who we actually didn't even list in our depth chart. It's our bad. Kanye Clark was with the main team ahead of him, a former walk-on. Croy Stewart only played sparingly. Those two guys were expected to be, you know, rotational pieces, and they really haven't gotten to that level. So it's going to be, you know, can Jameer Benjamin step in? Can Jaden Marshall, you know, take all that athleticism that he had from his, you know, high school days and really translate it to corner after making the switch over, during the season last year? A lot of question marks at corner. And then at safety, it's going to be three new starters. It's going to be a new starting nickel. It's going to be a new starting safety and another new starting safety. Brian Addison, is he going? I mean, I think we've heard optimism about his eligibility. I don't think we've heard final word on it.
The last I heard, they were really, really confident, but it, you know, we, I haven't checked up on it. I had heard there was a time, like 3 weeks ago to a month ago, where they would have known, and we would have heard if he weren't. So assume he's eligible.
And then Ramon Henderson, the transfer from, I believe, Notre Dame, and then KJ Wallace, the one from Georgia Tech at nickel. But these are all transfers, all of them. They've got to integrate into the system. They've got to integrate into, you know, what UCLA wants to do. They could do it easily, or it could take some growing pains, or, you know, they might not have, you know, the juice to replace what they're replacing. Alex Johnson was really good last year. Kamari Ramsey was really good last year. And Kenny Churchill was a six-year guy with, you know, a world of experience. So secondary is going to be a trouble spot that's going to need to be worked on constantly throughout the year. Edge rusher and secondary, if you're eyeballing issues potentially for this defense this year, those are the two of them. And then Darius Moussaou is going to have to be replaced. We've got Femi Oladejo stepping in there. He's going to give up a little bit athletically to Moussaou. He's a really good athlete, but he's not as lithe. Like, he's not going to get sideline to sideline quite as easily as Moussaou did. But I'm relatively confident he's going to replace him fine. So linebacker, I think, is fine. Defensive tackle, fine. Everything else, more or less a question mark.
Yeah, I generally agree. I'm really focused on, like what you said, on the edge position and getting a pass rush. For me, with as long as they retain Jay Toia, I think they have a chance to be a solid defense. They lose him and then the dominoes fall. Because you lose him, now you've really lost your interior. The number one interior guy of your defense that makes such a difference. You lose that, then it really overemphasizes the loss of the edge. And then it just trickles and ripples through. So I think one of the biggest objectives of this, personnel objectives of this spring is to retain Jay Toia. I think that's huge, but a lot of it comes from just the lack of a pass rush and where they're going to find that. Like you went through it, no matter what, if they actually had the chance at a decent pass rush this year, it would have to be coming from somewhere unexpected, right? I mean, where are they going to get it from? So that's going to be really interesting. I don't feel that bad necessarily about the secondary. At cornerback, it's more for me, Jalen Davies saying will be probably a little improved than he was last year. And he started last year. Devin Kirkwood, by the end of the season, was playing pretty well. Those are your starters. I would expect he'd be a little bit improved. The problem with cornerback is just the depth is who do you go to after those two guys? But I think the top end, I think the starters are fine. At safety, replacing all those guys is obviously an issue, but I think there's going to be some talent there to do it between Ramon Henderson, KJ Wallace, Brian Addison. I think there's enough serviceable to get that done. But there is no denying. There is no denying the edge and getting a pass rush. I mean, you've got Shea Bryant Strother, who's moved between that position and linebacker he'll be a redshirt senior for the entire time he's been at UCLA. You got a transfer in Jacob Busich, who I don't know if you can expect that too much out of. And Joseph Vaughn, another transfer. There just isn't a lot that you could clearly see is going to give them a pass rush. And as you've always emphasized and came absolutely to fruition this last year, so much of defense is dependent on a pass rush. So yeah, that's the main question mark. If they can find a pass rusher or two, I'm feeling okay. I'm feeling okay about linebacker. I mean,
yeah, linebacker will be fine.
Yeah. I mean, and Ali Kaho, we're hearing is going to be eligible and healthy. So they've got some depth. I'm a big Femi fan.
We love Femi.
I watched him a lot. Right. I think he has more sideline to sideline ability than we might think. But what I like to see from a middle linebacker is being able to throw off blockers and slice through.
Yeah, he's got no problem with that.
And you know, for the first 2 years that we saw Moussaou, he struggled with that. He'd overcommit, get blocked out of place. He was so much better last year. Femi doesn't have a problem with that. He throws guys aside. So I like to see that. I'm going to be, and Kane Medrano was rounding into being a star by the end of last year.
Yeah, no, he might play himself into the NFL draft this year.
Yep. So I'm fine. I'm really fine. And you got some young guys. I mean, Jalen Woods played some, looked okay. They raved about Donovan Pellet.
I liked him. Yeah. And I like, I like Mone Malifu too.
Yeah. So find a pass rush. Don't lose Jay Toia to the spring transfer portal for a significant amount of other starters. And I'm feeling okay. Overall, I want to say two.
Say it.
Here's a little nugget. And this is, this is the new UCLA staff might have some connections to some transfers. I'm just going to leave it at that. I'm not going to get into who they are and the probability of it happening, but
there might be some fun guys coming in after the spring.
There might be some fun guys coming in.
Yeah. Juicy nugget. We love juicy nuggets.
Yeah. Yeah.
Juicy nugget sounds really bad.
You know what's funny too is we drop a lot of it in podcasts.
We probably should write this stuff down a little bit more than we
do. Yeah, it's kind of funny, you know. We did it originally to say, hey, go listen to the podcast and you'll get a juicy nugget. And it hasn't seemed
as many people learn, it's easier to talk than it is to write.
Writing's it's so hard. Much. That's why. Why do you think everyone does podcasts? No one wants to write.
It's so hard to write. Like, you got to be like, oh, does this painful. Make sense? No.
It's painful. Writing after doing it for so long, I mean, we just want to talk. Can we just do all podcasts all the time?
Yeah. Actually, can somebody just transcribe it? I will dictate it into something, and you just write it. Because I write more or less the same way that I talk, so it would be fine. It would translate perfectly.
Okay. Anyone out there want to transcribe Dave?
Yeah, please. Please. Thank you. I appreciate you. Typing, it's just so much work. These two hands.
It's not even the typing. It's a blank page, and you've got to create. You know,
you got to stare at it until drops of blood form on your forehead. It's horrible.
Anything else, Dave? That's pretty good. I mean,
that was a juicy nugget full of podcasting.
Yeah. Yeah. There's your headline.
Yeah. I think we're good. I think we're all set. It's again, very funny that Arizona lost. I think we should all bask in that a little bit more. It's very, very funny. Uh-huh. Who do you have winning this thing?
Oh God. My original bracket was Purdue.
Okay. They could still do it.
Yeah.
I think they're going to lose to Gonzaga today, actually.
I don't want that to happen.
No, it's very Mark Few to actually make the Final Four or whatever, or make the Elite Eight with one of his like lesser Gonzaga teams, and then just constantly flame out with his really good ones.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, sometimes when I do a bracket, every year, I know... Obviously, we know a lot about college basketball, but for whatever reason, I go emotionally in my bracket. Sometimes I just want Arizona's got to lose. That's based on fact.
That's just based on observable fact.
But Gonzaga, you're going to lose. You're just losing, right? Duke gone, Kentucky gone. I just want them gone. I don't want to look at them on my bracket. I do everything so objectively in this job. When I do my bracket, it's just very emotion based.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
Well, I think it'll be UConn, as you know.
Yeah, I don't know. Right now, I'd say UConn.
Yeah, they look like a steamroller.
They do. 2 years in a row. See, now I'm starting to feel, wow, they're going to start being pushed into pretty permanent blue blood status if they win another.
I think they already are. I think the whole blue blood thing is... I think if you make a whole bunch of Final Fours, you should be in there. And if you win a bunch of titles, you should be in there. And they've won, what is it, four since 99 now?
Yeah.
They're blue blood. And they've got down years. You know what? I will make an argument, though. UConn is the lucky version of post-2000 UCLA. Because they've made like a similar number of Final Fours and a similar number of NCAA tournaments. UConn's missed it like eight times. But when they make the Final Four, they win the stupid thing. Do you know how unlucky it is that UCLA has made four Final Fours since 2000 and hasn't won one of those stupid things? Ben Hallen, yeah. Man. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, he did pretty well though. It's
come on, Ben.
It's an
accomplishment. Stop doubling the post.
Three straight Final Fours.
I know you want to double the post. Stop it. They're two good passing big men.
Tracy,
I just double the post. That's what
Greg Hicks thinks Russell Westbrook's a pro. He
thinks Russell's a pro. You get to stay, and you get to stay, but I'm fired.
I legitimately have very good feelings for Ben.
You know what we got to do?
We should get him on the podcast.
We got to get Ben on the podcast. I think it'd be fun.
Yeah, he would absolutely. I mean, he is one of the best basketball minds I've ever known to talk to. And just the way he processes things. And
can I just spend and you know what, asking the thing him about why him. He didn't put Westbrook on Rose?
Yeah, you can. But the funniest thing about Ben too is he does not project that he's a fun guy. And I actually had a lot of fun with him. I mean, when you're stuck in Las Vegas at like 1 a.m. driving around trying to find a basketball arena, high school basketball gym, you couldn't want to do it with Ben Hallen. There are a lot of people you wouldn't want to. Ben Hallen was fun. He loves hip hop, right? So he knows every hip hop song on the radio, right? I mean, he rented a Flex. So Greg and I would cruise around. We were cruising around Las Vegas in a Flex listening to hip hop with Ben Hallen.
Yeah, we got to get Ben on the pod.
Yeah.
That'd be fun. All right. Well, that's it. Enjoy the NCAA tournament this weekend, and we will talk to you again next week after spring ball has started.
We'll see y'all.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents.
Hands where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back. About to set it up. New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10/9 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.